It's now time for the Fantasy 411 Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And Fred, it has been already this season early, we have had some really remarkable eye-popping performances, especially from young players. We're going to start with a few of those. Start with Trevor Story, who we've already talked about a good bit, but kind of continues to do it, and it's still a really tiny sample size. But as he keeps hitting, does your take on him change at all?
Oh, I think it has to. I mean, first of all, he's probably earning some role security, you know, long term. You know, I mean, he's going to cool off, but he's probably earning some role security just by putting up such ridiculous numbers that even when he tails off, they'll still look really good. You know, I'm starting to feel like I want him in my top 10 shortstops right now, but I don't think I want him in my top 5. Do you agree with that?
I think that's reasonable. I think the thing you noted is really one of the big keys, which is, and something we talked about earlier, which is there comes a point where you hit enough that you're not going to go down. And one of the other things that we know, and I think you also just touched on this, it's a really key point here, and it's a point that other people have made, and I know Joe Sheehan's made it a few times, which is that, you know, you put up really stupid numbers early in the year, and your numbers look good for a long time. And so even if he fades significantly, human beings being what they are, if we get to the end of April and he's even slumping, but those overall numbers look really good because of the first week or two, he's got a better chance to hold on to a job. So I think the real key is that I think it's likely that he's going to continue to have a job in the big leagues, and that was obviously the biggest question. Like, you know, he's not going to hit like this all year, but I think he's going to play. I think I'd set the over-under for him on plate appearances this year probably somewhere around 450 at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, you can have a slump and your batting average can go down, but once you hit a home run, you own that home run for the rest of the season. So if he puts up enough homers, you know, to the point where he's kind of way out in front of every other shortstop or whatever, and, you know, I'm talking both in fantasy and for a real major league manager, like, those, even if his power tails off for a while, he might just have so many April home runs that it still looks good at the end of May or even in the middle of June just by him hitting even a couple in those months. I still feel like we talked about last week, if we would trade, for example, if we'd rather have him or Francisco Lindor, like I feel like I would still rather have that Lindor, Bogart, Seager class, and then he kind of comes in the next group, you know, maybe with Andrus and players like that. Do you kind of feel the same way, or would you start to consider him with those other young shortstops?
I like Lindor. For fantasy purposes, I like Lindor the most of that group, and I think Lindor is still clearly ahead of him. I think it's an interesting question with the other guys at this point, but that's just me. But that is kind of where I am. Is I really like Lindor, and I think that he's kind of does a broad base of things, and his even if he slumps, his glove is going to keep him in the lineup, and so I would not give up Lindor, but I would at least listen and start talking about the framework of a deal with the other guys.
Yeah, and I mean, like right now, the Rockies have had a really favorable schedule where they were in Arizona, mm-hmm. and then they're at home, and I mean, you know, like they're going to have a road trip where they go to Miami and Atlanta, and he's going to cool off. But that being said, like we've seen a lot of Rockies hitters over the years, and, you know, Charlie Blackman's one of them already who, like right now, who don't necessarily play that well on the road, but they're just so good when they're at home that the overall production makes them elite.
Yeah, absolutely. We will stay with young players bursting stat lines and opening eyes. Vince Velasquez just turned in an utterly ridiculous game. The seventh player in history, in the entire history of the game, with 16 strikeouts, no walks, no runs, and a nine-inning game. That follows six shutout in his first start, in which I believe he walked three, but also had a nice high strikeout total. He's really getting it done, and the thing he did today was not only did he not walk anybody, he threw an enormous percentage of strikes. He was maintaining his velocity at the end of the game. There is a lot to like here, and I know that the Phillies aren't going to have a lot of leads, and I know that in general he's not going to get that kind of leash. I think this is probably an element of something historic, and also his pitch count was still pretty low, but Velasquez a must-add for you at this point?
Oh, yeah, he has to be. I think after what he did today, like, you have to pick him up in every league. And I know he's, you know, not on one of the best teams in baseball, and he has a home park that's hard to pitch in and everything. But, like, we don't see performances like what we saw this afternoon very often. And it didn't come totally, you know, out of the blue. Like, this isn't, you know, Dallas Braden throwing a no-hitter or something like that. Like, this is a good prospect with a good strikeout rate, having a game, you know, that might be the best game of his career, but still, like, he could have a K per nine over nine this season.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about, these guys aren't all of a group, but we've talked about kind of a class of pitchers kind of on the fringe of, are you picking them up to keep, or are you waiting to see what they do? And you talk about, nearly all of them are picked up at this point, but when you talk about guys like Matt Moore, Aaron Sanchez, I sort of think of Velasquez in that group. Where do you like him relative to that sort of class of pitchers?
Yeah, I think today maybe pushes him up towards the front of that group. To me now, he's in that class where if he came out for his next start and threw five innings and gave up four runs and walked four batters, I wouldn't drop him, you know, even in a 10-team league. Like, I'd have to hang on to him. Just because now we can see maybe that even if he's a little inconsistent this season, that when he's on, you know, and he was good in his first start of the season, you know, when he's on, like, he's just that good. So, you know, to me, he has, say, higher upside than someone like Aaron Sanchez. So for that reason, like, if I saw a couple bad starts out of Sanchez in a 10-team league, I might drop him. Maybe not in a 12 or a 15, but in a 10, I would. And with Velasquez, I think now I probably wouldn't.
I think the other thing is that the Blue Jays have shown that they are willing to be aggressive with changes in roles if things aren't working. If Sanchez turns in a couple of clunkers in a row, I have to think they'll look at other options. I mean, I know they are committing him, and I know they don't want to jerk him around, but I also know that they know their window is not exactly multiple years, and if Sanchez doesn't get it done, I suspect they will look at other options. They had other options, and they chose him. I got to think that barring an utter meltdown or injury, Velasquez is in the Phillies' rotation.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't see Velasquez throwing 200 innings this year, but I see him throwing 165, 170, something like that. And across those innings, he could get you 185 strikeouts or something along those lines, maybe even 190. And, you know, even if he only wins 10 games, but with those strikeouts, and you can fill in for him if he gets shut down later, if they skip him at times, like, he could be really valuable.
One more guy in that same group, though, out of more like story than like Velasquez, in that he wasn't a big-time prospect coming up. Tyler White is really hitting. We knew he could hit for average. That was the tool we knew he had. He's also had three home runs, and that was really the question. We talked about Tyler White earlier over in the spring and said, look, yeah, I like him. I like a guy who's going to get base hits, but where's the power? He's now got three home runs. Maybe he's coming into a little power. Look, this is overreaction time of year. It's what we do right now. I admit that. But if Tyler White is a 15 to 20 home run guy rather than a 10 to 12 home run guy, what does that do for your evaluation of him going forward?
Yeah, no, and like we talked about with Story, it's about him buying himself time. It's about him holding off A.J. Reed. It's about him maybe getting into being the starting first baseman for the whole season. And that was one of the concerns with him. And, you know, if he could hit, like you said, 15, maybe 17 home runs with the high average, because he's always hit, like, in the minors. Like, he's always been a high average hitter. You know, to me, could he be, like, a little bit of an Eric Hosmer type, right? Like we've seen with Hosmer, totally mixed league valuable without ever hitting the 20, 25, 30 home runs. So, you know, could Hosmer be that kind of guy, high teens and homers and a high average? You know, I'm not saying he'll be as valuable as Hosmer this year, but could he be a bit of a poor man's Hosmer where he's useful in mixed leagues even without the big power numbers? Because there aren't a lot of 300 hitters anymore. So to me, that's what you're looking for, is a really high average and then just enough power.
Plus, you get a lot of hits and just enough power in a good lineup, you're probably going to drive in runs.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I say, make, I'm not going to go to the Hosmer point. Like, Hosmer hits cleanup for the Royals and, you know, probably driving 90 runs this year. Like, I'm not saying that necessarily for White, but like you said, you hit for high average and hit for a little bit of power, maybe he can drive in 80 runs or something like that.
I think that's a pretty good number. Joey Rickard, yes, another young guy, opening eyes. I like Rickard, but he's not a must add to me only because he's never really hit for any power. And I don't think he's going to run that much, and running is kind of the main thing. He's going to get base hits and steal bases. That's kind of his skill set. And I don't think he's going to run a lot with the Orioles. There's a job for him, and that's not nothing. He won a job, and they don't appear to be very high on the guy he beat out, so I don't think he's in any jeopardy. I think he's going to play. I'm just not sure I see what he offers from a fantasy perspective, even if he does play.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's fine to own in an AL-only league, and you hope that he scores some runs and maybe steals 12 or 15 bases this year. In a mixed league, though, I don't think he's like a regular for your lineup. He could be a short-term addition, like when they have a favorable schedule some week, you know, you pick up, or even just for the short term. I'll say in a 15-team league, you know, I lost Shinsu Chu last week, and the waiver wire is pretty barren, so I picked up John Jay for now. You know, had Rickard been available, maybe I would have considered him for like a short-term use, you know, kind of Jay-like, you know, maybe a little more speed from Rickard, but and that kind of thing. So I think that's kind of where he fits, but I don't think he's someone in 12 or 10-team leagues that you own. And in 15-team leagues, I don't think he's someone that you just put him in one of your outfielder spots and say, oh, yeah, that spot's covered, you know, as long as he's healthy.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I certainly would not pick him up. I'm just not looking to, as I guess, where I would be with that. Domingo Santana, guy who, when we first started, made headlines of the exact opposite. I actually wrote a piece for Sports on Earth, I guess that was 2, maybe even 3 years ago now, about his 0-for start. He is an unconventional leadoff man, but he's a leadoff man, and he's getting on base at a decent clip. This is one guy we do know does have power. I am intrigued by Santana. I'm still not entirely sure what to make of him and what it says that the Brewers want him leading off, and frankly, what I worry some when guys who are not leadoff hitters are asked to lead off, not because I think they can't, because I think sometimes young players try to be something they're not. So I do worry a little about that going forward, but Santana's a guy who's done it. I mean, he's put up some nice numbers in the minors. Again, not a conventional leadoff man, but home runs and runs is a pretty good start, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, he's someone I'm interested in even in 12-team leagues for sure, and maybe even 10-team. I don't love him hitting leadoff, you know, but I think that spot goes to Orlando Arcia probably by the summer anyways. And then he gets maybe to a spot that's a little better fit for him. And I can live with him hitting leadoff for right now because it kind of says to me that the Brewers think he's a really important part of their team, which means he's going to be in the lineup every day. And the batting average won't be helpful, but if he could hit 23, 25 home runs this season, and he does have just a little bit of base stealing ability, and that does all add up because there aren't that many steals out there right now. So if he could steal 7 or 8 bases, you know, you get to 30 or more combined homers and steals, and that's pretty valuable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the end, the question is he kind of hovers on this cusp batting average wise. You know, he hit 270, 280 in the minors. He hit 238 last year. But he's at 258 now. If this guy's a 250, 260 hitter, that's a nice profile. If he drops down to 230, then that starts being a little troublesome. And I guess the question is kind of how do you walk that line? Because I do think with a guy like that, that's kind of the question. Is he getting to the point where he's hurting you in batting average or just where he's not helping you?
Yeah, and because he's young, you know, fantasy owners are going to be fairly reactionary with him. You know, if a Mark Trumbo has really, you know, a 200 month, they might just stick with him because they feel like it'll just all even out in the end. But someone younger like Santana, you know, if he has, it's the question is if he has the 200 month, whether it is this month by the end or if it's May or whatever, that month will probably happen for him because he strikes out a lot. And then the question is, are you going to stick with him or not? And it really probably depends on the size of your league. In a 15-team league, you probably just stick with him because you want the power numbers. But in a 12 or a 10, that's where maybe you jump off. But at the jump-off point with him, I might try to keep him. You know what I mean? Like bench him, but not drop him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is a guy with a lot of upside. I think he's a guy that I could see him being a very good player in a couple of years. And sometimes that comes early, and you kind of you wouldn't want to have him and jump off and then have him blow up. You know, that's a position where you're feeling stupid.
Yeah, and this is a nice fit for him, like Milwaukee, you know, hitter-friendly home park. In a rebuilding team that can give him a lot of rope to kind of figure things out. So it's a lot better than if, you know, he was part of San Diego's outfield or the Giants or something like that, you know, them being a team in win-now mode. Like, he should get his, you know, 550-plus plate appearances this season and just let it see what he can do.
All right, we move on to injury conversation, which is the less fun part of this, but some significant ones here. The biggest news in the last week, Kyle Schwarber is out for the year. There were a lot of guys and probably not enough at-bats to go around with the Cubs, so there are a variety of guys who might see more playing time out of Jorge Soler, Javier Baez. Who do you kind of look at differently now that there's more opportunity in Chicago?
Yeah, I think Soler jumps back on the mixed league radar, and I had had people asking me, like, previous to this injury to Schwarber, you know, should I stash Soler? Do you still like him in mixed leagues? And I said, no, go ahead and drop him, because you can't count on one of those three players having a serious injury like this. This is really unusual, but you know, now I think Soler is back on the mixed league radar, but and he's a sleeper, I get it. Like, his minor league numbers were good, although the time there was brief, but he hasn't really fared that well in the majors, and I don't think that this makes him just to plug in your lineup and, you know, you just found a great waiver wire find and now you've got a starter for the rest of the season. I don't see that with him. I think he's going to have to hit to stay in the lineup, or Joe Maddon's going to mix and match a lot, and I'm just not totally confident that he will hit. Like, Matthew, do you expect him to be, you know, really valuable this year, or do you think we'll still see inconsistency? Because last year he wasn't really that good.
Yeah, expect is definitely a strong word. I don't think I could go all the way there. I think he's somebody that I wouldn't be targeting. He's somebody that if I could get him, throw-in is putting it too strongly. You wouldn't get him as a throw-in. But, you know, if I could get him as the second or third player in another deal and sort of make my hay somewhere else in the deal, but kind of get a flyer on him, I'd be very interested in that because, you know, the upside is really high. But I wouldn't want to make him the centerpiece of any sort of decision-making because, I, like you say, I just don't think I'm really that confident in what you get in him.
Yeah, for sure. And when we talk about teams in win-now mode, like, I feel like the Cubs are a little bit in win-now mode and a little bit in a win-in-the-future mode, but I think definitely enough in win-now mode that I don't think we can necessarily say that their current roster is all their options for that left field spot for the rest of the season. Like, if they're winning the Central or close to it in July and Soler's not hitting and Baez isn't hitting, you know, I could totally see them dealing one of those young players for a good player that can come in and help them right now.
Or even making a move somewhere else that, again, dents into that depth, you know, that you know, you make a move. So they've got a lot of sort of, if not interchangeable, at least movable pieces. And you know, they've got the kind of lineup where an addition can take at bats from multiple places.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Ben Zobrist can always go back to the outfield if they, yep, there's a second baseman they liked in a trade. Or, you know, like you said, there's just a lot of directions they can go. Like, this isn't like Domingo Santana where he's just going to play and work through a slump. Soler's got to hit, and he's got to hit now.
Absolutely. A couple of intriguing young players come up in the wake of outfield injuries. Chinsu Chu goes down, and Nomar Mazara is up. Ender Inciarte is out. Malik Smith is up. Two very different players. Smith has one clear tool right now, and he can get you steals if he hits at all. Mazara's a guy with kind of more of a broad base and hasn't really put up numbers at the highest levels in the minors yet. To me, he's a guy, they both kind of seem like, you know, well, there's a reason they weren't on opening day rosters. They're rushed a little as a result of these injuries. Between those two guys, who do you like more in the here and now? Long term is a separate question. I think Mazara is a really exciting prospect in the long term. And in the here and now, which of these guys do you like more?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it, because you're adding them to your team part way now, a lot of it's going to depend on what you need. Like, if you already have a D. Gordon, then I like Mazara right now. Or, you know, if you have an Altuve or something, then I probably like Mazara more right now. I'll say that I think for 2016 that Mazara maybe has a bit of a higher floor, whereas Smith has a higher ceiling. Like, Smith has that ability. And now both players could be back in the major or in the minors by June 1st. But if they can stick, like, Smith has that ability to steal 30 or 40 bases. If like you said, if he hits at all and stays in the lineup, Mazara, you know, like, I don't think he's going to make a huge impact on your team. But if he stays hitting second for the Rangers, like, he can just probably be involved in a fair amount of run scoring, hit for a decent average. So it kind of probably just depends what I'm looking for, because the profiles are really different.
And, you know, the other thing that comes in play here is that, you know, Mazara, like I noted, is a guy who could do a lot of things. And I think if you're talking about him in 2 or 3 years as a guy who could hit for power, could hit for average, a guy who could really be a nice all-around player, sometimes that comes quickly. I mean, I think that's the thing to remember, is that the player that Mazzara is going to be, I think, in 3 years is a more exciting player, I think, than the player Smith is going to be. And you do kind of – I feel like you kind of have to bake in some. You don't want to get – you don't want to be that guy who's all about the prospects and gets too cute and goes for the young guys. But I think you also have to account for the fact that sometimes that comes early. Sometimes guys come into that ability and they become the player we think they're going to be before we think they're going to get there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, and then I often try to think about, like, what are the percentage chances that these players can actually stay in the majors beyond when the players they're directly replacing come back from the DL. And with Smith, I kind of feel like Atlanta's rebuilding. If Smith's hitting 290 when Inciarte comes back, like, I think they might be heavily motivated to keep him around. Mazzara, I'm not sure, because when Chu comes back, like, they do have a lot of, like, I don't think you just make Mazzara your fourth outfielder. They'd have to find ways to get him in the lineup to keep him up, because they have a lot more options, you know, whereas the Braves can, you know, if this season, a big part of the season ends up being about developing Smith, then that's probably cool with them.
Yeah. Other injuries, a couple starters dealing with some things. Tyson Ross has a shoulder issue. That makes me a little nervous. I, you know, as we talked about, I'm not as high on him as some people are anyway. I think you're holding him for sure. You're not dropping Tyson Ross, but I also think that if you were counting on him to be a big part of your team, if you're counting on him as, like, your second starter, then if it's me, I'm making alternate plans to have a strong second starter. Do you think that's a fair way to look at it?
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, you know, we can go back to the beginning of this podcast and, you know, let's say you were the smart owner that picked up Vince Velasquez last week and then he does what he did today. Now, if the Tyson Ross owner came along to tomorrow and said, I'll take Velasquez off your hands, I'll give you Tyson Ross, you know, like, knowing that Ross can be on the DL for an undetermined amount of time, which pitcher would you rather have?
It's just me, and I say this as somebody with something of a bias, that, as we know, I'm not a big Tyson Ross guy. I'm not giving up really anything of value for Tyson Ross until I see that he's pitching again. There are some guys hurt that I'm acquiring knowing I'm going to get something. If let's say DeGrom goes on the DL as a result of this lat thing, I'm still talking about him in deals. And, in fact, if somebody wants to get off of that train, I want to get on. Tyson Ross is not a guy that I'm going to make a move for hurt. I'm just, you know, if it's an ankle and they say, look, his ankle is sore, he sprained his ankle, he's back in 2 weeks no matter what, okay, I get that. But when you're talking about his arm, you're talking about a guy I'm not that crazy about in the first place, I'm not giving up anything of value to get him just because, again, I'm not sure how high the upside is when he comes back and it's his shoulder.
Yeah, and he is someone who kind of toes the line. Like, he's pretty valuable in fantasy when it's going well, but his whip's typically pretty high, and then it's hard to expect him to have a really high win total when he's backed by a Padres lineup that isn't that good, and he often doesn't go very deep into games. So, I mean, you take out those two categories, he usually has a pretty solid ERA, and he usually has a high strikeout rate. But it's amazing that we're not even 2 weeks into the season, and we're talking about Tyson Ross, who is, you know, say, one of the first 25 pitchers taken in most drafts, and we're comparing him against Vince Velasquez, who was one of the last pitchers taken in most mixed league drafts or started the season on waivers in a lot of mixed leagues. Like, it's amazing how fast, like, one injury, you know, to Ross, which we don't know, is like, this isn't like Schwarber. Like, he could be back in 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And then, you know, a couple good starts and one outstanding start, I guess I should say, from Velasquez. And it's amazing how fast things can change, especially for pitchers.
Yeah, and look, some of this is confirmation bias. We tend to talk about small sample size when it's the numbers that disagree with what we thought, and we tend to talk a little less about small sample size when it's the numbers that agree with what we thought coming in. I alluded to Jacob deGrom. He has a lat issue. Now, that turned out to be a rather big deal for Steven Matz last year, and deGrom is a guy, you know, I think it's fair to worry just broadly about his health. I don't think he is an injury-prone guy, but I think he's somebody that it's fair to sort of wonder how he's going to hold up as he continues to develop as a young starter. I love DeGrom. I would not be worried, but if you had him, well, let me put it this way. Are you more looking to get out if you own him, or are you more looking to be the guy on the other end of that deal saying, yeah, you want to dump Jacob DeGrom? Let's talk.
Yeah, I do feel like maybe this is enough of a concern to push him down a little bit, like, maybe into that John Lester-type category. Like, I feel like that's maybe a bit of a fair swap now, whereas DeGrom was going a couple rounds ahead of someone like Lester. you know, just 3 weeks ago. So I think if I was a DeGrom owner, just because there's so many aces out there, if someone wanted to give me like 90 cents on the dollar, like a Lester type, I think I'd listen on that. I mean, you always have to know what the rest of your pitching staff looks like and how much, you know, can you afford to risk with DeGrom. But I feel like I would do that. I don't think I would go down to like the Carlos Martinez types or the Michael Walker or Marcus Stroman types, like thinking back kind of where pitchers went in draft. I'm not going down there with DeGrom right now, but I might go down a couple rounds.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Lester is a bad example because I'm not big on him, and I look at it, his numbers were good last year. I feel like DeGrom's upside is really high. I feel like what DeGrom could be, even if you tell me, look, he's only making 28 starts this year, what he could do in those 28 starts, I would have a hard time. It's weird to talk about a low-ceiling ace, but I feel like Lester is a low-ceiling ace, and I would be hesitant to do it with somebody like that. You know, somebody like someone like a Strasburg, you know, is to me somebody. I would have a hard time giving up DeGrom without thinking that the guy I got in return might also have a ridiculous year in him. I just don't think Lester has got a ridiculous year in him.
No, you're right. He probably doesn't, and I think, yeah, you probably can't trade DeGrom right now just based on kind of where they all went in drafts. Like, you probably can't trade him for the Strasburg, Kluber types. Maybe you could trade him for a Dallas Keuchel type. I don't know if you'd want to trade him for Chris Archer right now, who's kind of off to a slow start like himself. And then it's kind of like
Lester. But that's
Lester,
the kind of guy, that's the kind of guy I would be looking at. Like, Archer is off to a slow start, but that's the kind of guy I would need to get because you have that percentage chance of a year that makes you go, whoa. I just couldn't give up DeGrom for a guy who doesn't have that chance.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And, I mean, if someone's a DeGrom owner listening right now and they're worried, what you can do is you can kind of just send out multiple offers to different owners and, you know, ask the Strasburg owner if he's interested, ask the Kluber owner if he's interested. You know, if you feel good about Archer, ask the Archer owner if he's interested. And if someone else feels good about Keuchel, ask the Keuchel owner if he's interested. And you could send out three or four of those right away if someone's kind of looking to get off DeGrom. I think maybe if you kind of went twin aces, like if you early in your draft you got, like, yep, DeGrom and Lester or DeGrom and Carrasco or something like that, then you're probably going to want to wait because you have a little extra support there. If you went DeGrom and then you didn't take a pitcher for a few rounds, so you're really relying heavily on him, maybe that's when you feel like you are willing to sell a little bit to stabilize.
And I was just about to say that kind of consideration would heavily affect what I would be looking for in return. You know, if I had a rotation of lottery tickets, if I had, you know, if Carlos Martinez was a big card, and I love Carlos Martinez, Jaime Garcia, guys like that who can be very, very good, but you're not that, even Archer, but you're not that confident in, then maybe I am willing to move DeGrom for a safer guy. You know, that kind of is what comes into it there is, if I've got somebody who's a rock who I know is going to be really good, then I stand by what I said. I need that upside. But if DeGrom was one of, you know, somebody I was counting on maybe more safe, then maybe I need that sort of higher floor, even if it means a lower ceiling.
Yeah, and league size matters because in a 10-team league, I'd probably just be stubborn and hang on to DeGrom unless I'm getting almost, you know, full value for him, and you're not going to get that. So I'd probably just stay stubborn because, you know, we talk all the time about how guys like Velasquez and Aaron Sanchez and all these pitchers, you can pull them on 10-team leagues. These things are happening all the time in there. If I'm in a deeper league where there's not much on the waiver wire and, you know, if I lose DeGrom at some point for a month, then, you know, I'm picking up some pretty ugly starting pitchers or I'm just going to have to settle for throwing in a middle reliever, that's when maybe I'd be a little more inclined to take the Lester type just for the security of it.
Yeah. Moving on down, it's time to talk closers, which is always an important thing, especially as these things are changing early in the year. You know, these things will start to crystallize a little more in a couple weeks, and it actually looks like one of them has maybe crystallized. I gave a little bit of a hard time to somebody, a friendly hard time, to somebody in our office league for picking up Jeanmar Gomez. But Jeanmar Gomez has survived that first few days where the Phillies, for a while, were basically turning over anybody. You have one bad outing, it's not you anymore. Gomez survived that. Now it looks like maybe he's safe for a little while. How safe do you think he is? And Is he somebody you're targeting, or just somebody that if you picked him up, you're glad you have him?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm necessarily targeting him, but he does have for sure have some security now. I mean, it tends to be the way major league managers work. You know, like you said, with those Phillies relievers, like they kind of got their one shot, and if you blow your one shot, then they try someone else. But once you convert three or four save chances, now, you know, maybe you get that rope to blow a save or two. You know, that's kind of where I feel like he's at. Like, he could have one blown save. Maybe he could have two blown saves, and they'd still go back to him. Three, he'd probably be done. Like, he's not in that class where at all. I'm not high on him because I feel like he is the one category closer. You know, he's going to get you saves, but he's not going to get you strikeouts, and his ratios will probably just be okay. So I just don't see a lot of upside there. Like, in a 15-team league, you're excited to get anyone who gets saves. But in, like, a 10-team league, you know, where I just have a higher standard there, so I would use him if I was desperate, I guess, in one of those leagues. But I might not even pick him up in a 10-team league just because there's no upside there beyond him getting, you know, 25 or 30 saves. I feel like that's the upside, and with his strikeout rate and his ratios, it's probably not that exciting.
Yeah, and again, he's not that safe. If it starts going badly consistently, they'll look at other options. Elsewhere in closer news, the A's may be going with a little bit of a job share, and it's two guys that I like, but neither one that I love. What do you do with a guy who might get you 15 saves, who's not a Betances, a Miller, who's going to also get you 100 strikeouts?
Yeah, I mean, in a 15-team league or in an AL or NL-only league, you're happy with that guy, and you're glad that you got that guy for a small investment. But in, like, a 10- or a 12-team league, like, I feel like you can't put Ryan Madsen or Sean Doolittle in your lineup right now until one of those players emerges. And then the question kind of then goes to bench size. And if you don't have a really large bench, do you want to own one of them and hope that he emerges as the everyday guy, when the A's have said that they're willing to be flexible in the late innings and play matchups a little bit? You know, so, like, I thought a lot this week about, you know, if I was, in a, like, looking at the waiver wire and Ryan Madsen's there and Gomez is there, and Kevin Jepsen's there, who could be a temporary, will be a temporary closer at the very least for the Twins. Like, which one am I targeting? You know, Matthew, which one would you target?
I like Jepsen the most in that bunch. I think that you know, he's been quite good pretty recently. I don't know that he's any less safe than Gomez. The thing about Jepsen to me is I think it's fair to worry exactly how sound Glenn Perkins is. I think it's not entirely clear that Glenn Perkins just comes back in 2 or 3 weeks and takes the job back. You know, he struggled in the second half last year. I didn't see him in spring, but I have read that he didn't really look like himself in spring. I think this is a guy that I'm worried about. And he's a fun pitcher. He's a guy that it's sort of you want him to be good, and so I'm pulling for him. But I don't know that I have a whole lot of confidence that Perkins quickly comes back and reclaims that role. I think Jepsen could have it for a while.
Yeah, no, I do too. And of those three pitchers, you know, Jepsen's the one that I would rather own, just because I know I'm going to get saves right now for a few weeks, and then who knows beyond that. But there is that possibility. Like, Perkins had an ERA above 7 in the second half of last season and wasn't off to a great start this year, and now the injury, and like, it just all adds up to maybe a pitcher who's out for a really long time, or maybe a pitcher who's out but he comes back and he's not effective right away, and then they just say, well, forget it, you know, we're going to stick with Jepsen in the ninth inning, or any of those things could happen. I feel like Jepsen, of Madsen, Gomez, and Jepsen, I feel like Jepsen's the most likely one to get 30 saves this season, while acknowledging that he may only get 10. I feel like he's the most likely one to get 30.
I think, yeah, and I agree with that. I think the other thing to note is that if you kind of put yourself in the head of a manager or a front office, and let's say the Phillies surprise and even just kind of hang around, which I don't think they're going to do, but you never know. Jomar Gomez is the kind of guy that even if he's putting up saves, well, one, there's a decent chance he gets moved somewhere to set up at midseason. But, you know, he doesn't look like a closer. He throws 91, and he's the kind of guy that if he scuffles a bit, you look at your other options. Jepsen throws 94, and it seems silly, but I think teams, when they put that guy in, they say, yeah, he looks like a closer. That's a ninth-inning guy who just hasn't done it before. We're good with him. I think there's a level of safety that a guy who throws hard has that a guy who doesn't does not have. And we're parsing real fine, but I really think there's something to that, that when you slot Kevin Jepsen in there, I don't think anybody's saying, well, yeah, he's just temporary till we can get somebody else in there. He's temporary till Perkins comes back, but I don't feel like they're worrying. And I feel like in the back of a manager's head, you put Jean-Marc Gomez out there, you're worrying every time.
Yeah, and I mean, if Gomez blows a save or two, that thought's going to go through the Phillies coaching staff saying, well, this guy's not really a closer. Like, we're using him because we're desperate, but this guy's not really a closer. Maybe we'll look at somebody else now. Whereas if Jepsen blew a save next week, I feel like the Twins would say, well, you know, he did the job fine last year. He has closer stuff. This was just a bad outing, and you just keep rolling along. So, I mean, that does matter. Managers are people, and after a game on the drive home or whatever, you know, it's when that blown save happens and it's frustrating, do they go back and think, well, you know what, this guy is a closer. He's my closer. This was just a rough night. Or do they go back and think, I just don't think this guy's suited for the role. And it's easy to look at Gomez's stats and say he's not really suited for the role.
That's exactly it to me. Do a quick drop on a couple of starting pitchers. Steven Matz, I wonder a little, just because there's such a short track record and history of health questions. Are you worried about Matz? It's way too early to worry about anybody. With that said, are you worried about Matz?
Not really. I mean, his minor league numbers were really good. This might be a time to buy low on him if you can, just because his last start was such a disaster. So, yeah, I would buy low on him. It just feels like everything's just kind of going wrong with the Mets right now, and, you know, hitters and pitchers, and I just feel like that can't continue. Like, I think there's too much talent there in that clubhouse. So, yeah, I would look to buy low on him. The discount has to be there, but, yeah, I'd take a look at it.
One guy I am a little – worried might not be the right way to put it. I just kind of think maybe this is – maybe he's not the guy we thought. That's Zach Greinke. Look, he's not going to post a 9 ERA all year, but you look at the pitcher he was before last year, and he was consistently between 2010 and 2014, consistently a very good pitcher, but a guy whose overall numbers basically profiled as a 2. Get him out of Dodger Stadium and into a really good place to hit in Arizona. Is he a 2 again? Did we overrate Greinke coming into the year?
Yeah, I think that we did. I think that the Dodgers just seemed to be the perfect fit for him. Like, not only was he just unbelievable last year, but just the whole time he was with the Dodgers, he was just really, really good. And he seemed really comfortable there, and he's kind of a quirky guy. Maybe it just suited him really well to kind of be the second fiddle behind Kershaw and, you know, let Kershaw take all the attention, and he just does his thing behind him and everything. And this is just really different now. It's a hitter-friendly park, and he's by far the leader of that staff and kind of the guy they're pinning their hopes on to catch up to the Dodgers and the Giants this year. And, you know, like, I'm not saying he can't handle it. We'll see. But he isn't off to a good start. And I don't know. The strikeout rate's not going to be elite, so you need really good ratios for him to be an ace. And I'm just not that confident that we're going to get there. I might rather own, going back to our previous conversation, like the John Lesters and the Sonny Grays, I might just as soon own those players who were clearly drafted behind him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I think that's a perfectly fair point. And I think I may have talked about this briefly coming into the year. I like Greinke a lot. I don't mean to run the guy down. And he's coming off a year where he was a arguably the best pitcher in the National League, a deserving Cy Young candidate. But I think even given that, we probably should have looked a little more at what came before and kind of realized that, to some extent, last year was the outlier. He's done this twice now. He's had two historic seasons, but that's in 8 or 9 years. This is not a Kershaw. This is not a Felix from 2 years ago. This is a very good pitcher who's had two historic years.
That's right. And we have seen bouts of inconsistency in his career. And it wasn't always smooth sailing, you know, when he pitching with the Brewers and things like that. So, I don't think we should be totally shocked if he's not an ace, or maybe even not even a number two, if he just doesn't have a great year this year and he could go back to being a number two next year. Yeah, that's kind of where, to me, I don't own Greinke on any team, so I did kind of put my money where my mouth is on this one. To me, he was after all the DeGroms and Harveys and Strasburgs and Klubers. To me, he was at the end of that group, and once I put him at the end of that group, I knew someone else would take him before I would.
Yep, definitely agree. Definitely agree. Let's talk about two start pitchers, and there are some guys I really like in this bunch and some guys I really don't like. Robbie Ray, Jake Peavy, Kevin Gausman, Chase Anderson, Jared Eichhoff, Colin Ray. Couple of guys I really like in there. We'll get to that in a minute. But who are you targeting from that bunch of two-star pitchers next week?
Yeah, I really like Eichhoff. I just feel like that whole Phillies rotation is, you know, the young ones especially, are kind of trending in the right direction. He's looked really good all the time, you know, that he's been in the majors. So I like him for next week. He's home to the Mets and then at the Brewers. And I, in deeper leagues, like 15-team league, I like Robbie Ray. Like, I've just kind of always been a bit of a Robbie Ray guy. And I know the Giants and the Pirates are two tough, you know, opponents. But I feel like he'll be okay and probably get 10 strikeouts next week. So that makes him pretty valuable. And I'm, like, a little interested in Adam Conley because he's off to a decent start this year. And Chase Anderson, same reason. I'm not, like, super optimistic on them. But in a deeper league, like, it's not always a bad idea to just take a shot on someone who's been pitching well and has two starts.
The thing about Eichhoff to me is that I like a guy, you know, he didn't have overall great minor league numbers. He wasn't, I don't think he's ever been a top 100 prospect. He wasn't one of the key guys, but I like a guy, a young pitcher, when I can see what he's doing, when I can look and go, oh, yeah, that's plus. And that curveball, you look at that and you say, oh, yeah, that's a pitch I can get behind. That's something that I can look at that and say, I believe that. Because pitchers are, as we know, really hard to project, hard to read.
Yeah, and we talked last week about this being April, and when you pick up a two-star pitcher right now, maybe you want to have it a little bit in the back of your mind of, instead of getting too much wrapped up in the matchups, is to think, after I get those two starts, which of these pitchers do I think it's most likely that I would actually want to keep owning, yep, you know, for the rest of the season? And to me, Eichhoff's that guy. Among the rest of them, Conley, Anderson, you know, whatever. Like I said, I kind of have a soft spot for Ray and think maybe he could break out at some point. But to me, Eichhoff's the guy who you're most likely to want to just keep, you know, for a while after this. And I think that does matter this time of year.
I agree. To me, it's Eichhoff and then Ray, a guy I like. Robbie Ray, a guy I like. One guy I would have said certainly 7 or 8 months ago, a year ago, a guy that I was kind of the last guy on the Kevin Gausman bandwagon, and I've got a sore foot, so maybe that's from jumping off the Kevin Gausman bandwagon. I can't see it. I can't pick him up. I can't even pick him up to stash on my bench. I can't pick him up in hopes that he gets hot. I want to be wrong because I really like him, and he has really high-end ability or has shown that, but I'm totally off Kevin Gausman entirely. Do you want to try and talk me out of that, or are you with me there?
No, I think this is a smart decision for you. You know, and I've liked him at times, maybe not quite as much as a lot of other people do, because he's someone in the fantasy community who's had a lot of buzz at times over the years. But to me, it adds up. Like, it just all the, like, he's coming off an injury. The Orioles don't have a great staff and haven't done a great job with young pitchers, and we've talked about that. And then his schedule is going to be really difficult. And, you know, we see he may be back next week, and if he does come back next week, he's going to go straight into playing the Blue Jays and then playing the Royals. And, I mean, that's just, I think, indicative of what he's going to see a lot of those American League teams. That makes it, you know, a bit of an uphill battle for someone who just hasn't done it yet. I would rather stash someone like Eichhoff or use them for the two-star where you can keep them. I'd rather pick up a Robbie Ray type and hope that he gets rolling, because I just think the matchups are going to be a lot easier. There's a lot of things Gausman needs to overcome here.
Yep, I agree. And that makes me sad because he's a guy I really liked and a guy I thought was going to be very good. But right now I can't be on that. So that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Let's say we do it again in a week or so. Thanks, Brett Zinke, for taking the time to talk.
Yeah, definitely.